Crafting images for wartime viewers isn't new. During World War II, American audiences poured into movie theaters week after week to be consoled. Film critic Richard Schickel was among them, and he revisited the reels that shaped his boyhood for a memoir called Good Morning, Mr. Zip Zip Zip. But now, his mature and critical eye sometimes finds those old films contrived and misleading.
Almost every Hollywood movie, to this very day, buttresses the basic values of the country. I mean, the whole idea of certainly movies of the 40s and even of the 30s were always bringing everybody into camp and then out of camp into a heroic endeavor. Most movies were supposed to, in some way or other, either directly or metaphorically, support the war effort.
Let's talk about some of the movies that came out during the war, but that were set on the home front.
The main thing about home front movies, and they were often not necessarily even set contemporaneously. You know, a movie like Meet Me in St. Louis is set at the turn of the century. But what they emphasized was that duty might call, in that case, the father, to go elsewhere, take a job in New York in this particular case. And the family hated that idea. They hated the notion that they would have to uproot themselves, as so many Americans had to do during the war.
No, you can't. You can't do anything like you do in St. Louis.
Oh, no, darling, you're wrong. No, no, New York is a wonderful town.
And eventually they don't have to in this movie. But before it happens, there's that song, Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas, which is about somebody having or trying to have a merry little Christmas far, far, far from home, far, far from the people and the places that they love and which shape them. And that's a big theme in domestic American movies.
What themes did Hollywood avoid during the war years for the most part?
I mean, the Holocaust was never once mentioned in the movies. The government had surveys which indicated that America was endemically anti-Semitic. So as a war aim, the notion of rescuing Jews in Europe was thought to be, by the American government, not a good idea to put before the American people. And so we fought the war in Europe on the screen as a war of downtrodden idealists doing their best to oppose the Nazi juggernaut.
You note in your book that Hollywood seemed to be a lot tougher on the Japanese than they were on the Germans.
The Japanese were, in wartime movies, the great other. They took the place of, let's say, the American Indian. They were people who were shown to be animalistic, to be beyond the purview of civilized conduct. The Germans, according to the American government, were always to be shown to have some measure of redemptive possibility. They were shown to be people who had been misled. It was shown to be a sort of a temporary aberration on the part of the Germans.
One of the prevailing themes you note in your book is that the movies always stress the value of every individual. There's no sense of cannon fodder in the wartime movies that you saw.
The cannon fodder was always in the back of the frame. But, you know, those people who were in the starring roles, if they were forced to confront death, always did so heroically. I mean, yes, they're going to become physically dead, but that death will be redeemed. He will be remembered. They made a movie of Hemingway's For Whom the Bell Tolls with Ingrid Bergman and Gary Cooper. And he has broken his leg and he has blown the bridge. But even so, on come the Phalangists, and this little guerrilla band that he's hooked up with, which includes his lover, has to retreat, but his leg is busted, so he can't retreat. Although it seems to me he might have given it a try. I mean, you
know. No, no, stay with you.
No, each of us must do this thing alone. This thing alone. Do it for each other. But if you go, then I go with you. That way I go too.
There was this notion that if you were heroic and if you were American and if you were fighting for the right cause, that you would not die fully. I mean, there were a lot of, incidentally, wartime movies in which people like Spencer Tracy would die. But they would go on. You know, there would be ghosts. They would be whispering advice to Van Johnson in the next reel. Remember Tender Comrade? You know, Robert Ryan dies far away and Ginger Rogers picks up a picture of him and she has this little baby in his arms. She says, you know, I'm going to introduce you to your father. And he died for the best world you can imagine. You know, it's a world not with hate in it. And we're all going forward into prosperity and pacification and all of that. I mean, all of these tropes are just preposterous, you know. I mean, I don't say that it wasn't a good war or a war we shouldn't have fought. But, you know, the fact of the matter is we were consistently lied to. And I suppose if there's a theme to Good Morning, Mr. Zip, 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 it's that. That this is a cinema that essentially, and with malice aforethought, lied to us. And lied to us about important matters, not least of which is the Holocaust.
Well, Richard Schickel, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Richard Schickel's book is called Good Morning, Mr. Zip, 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 Movies, Memory, and World War II. We spoke to him in April of 2003.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.